Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Guitar Goddess Radio with Azina, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Guitar Goddess Show, guys. Today you are in for a treat. We have an amazing show in the studio today. We have Carolyn Richardson. Carolyn, as you guys know, is an independent music supervisor and the founder of Music for Scenes, a music consulting firm. She has over 10 years' experience in music licensing and music supervision and TV, film, and new media. Carolyn is also a member of the Guild of Music Supervisors. She's totally legit. And the Television Academy. She's worked for Entertainment Tonight and The Insider for over 10 years, where she produced music-related segments and reviewed music releases. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We're so excited. You know, we got started about a week ago letting people know that you were coming on the show, and
amazing.
People are so super psyched. They sent in tons of questions.
Great.
And instead of jumping right in, I want to ask one quick question.
Okay.
The title of our show is Demystifying Music Supervision.
Yes.
Is that possible?
It is.
I think it is. Yeah.
I think once you figure out or focus on the fact that there's a story that needs to be told, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then everything else can line up, because everything is about telling the story the best way possible. If we keep that in mind, then we can definitely demystify music supervision.
All right. Because, you know, I'm just going to let you know, there are a lot of people in our group that are like, you know, music supervision, it seems like this other worldly thing. Like, how do I get in? How do I break in?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's start talking about that. I just want you to give people just like a quick roundup of what music supervision actually is, because I think we got it wrong as artists.
Okay. So I usually tell people that music supervision is like working in real estate.
Okay.
Right? Instead of houses, I am basically selling and leasing songs. And so my goal as a music supervisor is to make sure that the people who are buying houses or music know exactly what's available within their budget, within what they're looking for, and I'll say the size of the house, or the, you know what I mean, whether or not they need a whole bunch of condos or if they need that one big house. That is kind of the scope. So if you understand real estate, you can generally understand what music supervision is. But I'm kind of like a real estate agent for songs.
I love that, and that just makes it so clear. It's like crystal clear for me right now.
Yeah, right?
Like exactly what music supervision is, because I think as artists, you know, we go and we create our songs, and, you know, we work to get them out there in the world, and then you see other songs and in TV and film, and you're like, how did that happen?
Exactly.
Yep. So how does that happen?
How does it happen? Yes. Ooh, that's a big question.
Okay.
That's a big question. Ooh, how does it happen? It happens a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
That's the best way to answer it.
Okay.
Just like living somewhere, it happens a whole bunch of different ways, right?
Yeah.
You may have somebody who knows somebody who mm-hmm. has a house they're leasing out. You might know someone who is an agent. You may know a real estate agent. You may just know a director who's looking for songs. So there's different ways that it happens. If a music supervisor has something to do with it, it happens because we have a relationship with either a production company, a producer, or a director, or it happens because we're directly pitching songs for projects in a licensing capacity. So there's different ways.
Okay, so for an indie artist who, you know, I'm just going to be real, guys. You know how we are. We stay in our studios, we create songs, and we're kind of in this insular world.
Uh-huh.
You know, how does an indie artist break into getting their songs in TV and film?
Well, I think it's more about getting your songs on the market.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, yep.
So it's less about trying to get it sold right away, because that's not your job, generally speaking.
Right.
That's my job.
Right.
So your job is to get it within the market. And what that means is you have to make your music sellable, And so you couldn't sell a house if you didn't have a listing, if you didn't put it up for sale. There's different places where you can have your home for sale. So you have to find out how you're going to market your songs and what that's going to look like. So the first thing you need to do is make sure all of your songs are in a medium that can be shopped. So if it's MP3s or if it's streaming, however you want to put your songs up, they need to be in a space where I can share them with other people. So I generally, people don't like downloads. You don't even like downloads anymore, right? So no, why would you send me a link? You don't like downloads. Nobody emails you songs anymore, right?
Absolutely.
You find them on, right? You find them on streaming platforms.
Yes.
You find them, some people still listen to the radio. Shout out to LA Talk Radio. You find them online, you find them on social media. So that's your goal. Your goal is to figure out, where am I going to market my songs from? I like Source Audio. I like Songspace. Those are places where you can not only post your songs for streaming, but I can also find out the rights to the music and all of that, all in the same platform. So if I wanted to know who are the owners of the music on Source Audio and Songspace, and there are others, so I don't want to just put out as though those are the only two, but there are other places, then I wouldn't even have to talk to you, because you already have put it on Source Audio and Songspace, who the rights holders are. So if I need to license a song, I know exactly who all I need to contact. I don't have to go do all the research that it generally requires to. So that's the goal. That's the short answer.
No, that's a banging answer right there. Giving those two, Songspace and Source Audio.
Yes.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And other platforms like that, mm-hmm. where you can upload all your music with all the rights and that information.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be found accidentally just by having your stuff on sites like that.
Exactly. You know? And a big part of that is metadata. So mm-hmm. you need to know, especially if you're pitching your music, you need to become recognizable. So we as music supervisors, we're looking for music that fits moods, that fits storylines, and that fits characters. So if we're looking for that, we're not looking for the title of your song. We're just not. We're looking for songs that are tagged as love songs, that are tagged as R&B, that have moods in them, sad, depressed, that have other things that kind of make your song stand out. And so those places also allow you to add metadata to your songs so that they're not only searchable by an artist name or a song name, but also by the moods that they evoke, by the lyrics. Putting lyrics in is such a huge deal these days. Sometimes we're literally searching songs about awards, songs about dads and moms, songs about those types of things. And without lyric searches and without metadata, we don't know how to find those songs unless we just are dialed in to everything that everybody's working on. And sometimes we're not.
I love that. That was so key. Guys, did you hear that? She said your metadata. And I know we're techies in the music world, but we also have to be techies when you're putting your music out there.
Yeah.
Making sure, like she said, tagging what type of song it is and also the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because as I was uploading some of my music, I was putting the lyrics, and I'm like, this is probably overkill with information, but I'm so happy to hear you saying, like, that's okay.
Okay, so I'm going to take y'all back, okay? I started in music supervision when we still had to use CDs to give to the editors to basically rip the CDs and put the songs in.
Wow.
I used to have stacks of CDs, okay? Now, this is before iTunes. People. I had stacks of CDs. I had to write on a post-it literally the time in and out of the track. I had to write down the track number of the track, and I literally had to tell the editor, this is where we start the lyrics, because even if he had a time code on it, I'm not a machine, so I'm going to give him a time that I can see from my little stereo that I'm pressing play on, mm-hmm. but he as an editor needs an exact time, and the only way we're able to give him that is by telling him the lyrics. So just think about that he's going by lyrics. Just way back when, it was all about what lyric is right there. Or if it was an instrumental only song, I would have to give him a timing and kind of an up or down beat. So he would have to find things by waveform. So I know I'm going way back, but what I'm saying is, when iTunes came, with Grace Note, mm-hmm. where you could search things by the album title and by song lyrics and by everything. It was so amazing, but not everybody put in their lyrics. Not everybody put in the vibes or, you know, the songs, like additional metadata. But those people who did, they're the ones who kind of got in early when we were able to start searching things so much more. I mean, before, all we had to go off of is who mailed us CDs.
Wow.
That's all we had to go off of. I mean, yes, we had the internet, but in terms of searching for music, it was so much harder because you really did only have artist name, song title, album title. There was not, I mean, allmusic.com has everybody's information, but it wasn't as easy to search as iTunes and Gracenote has made it. And so, yeah. Is that important?
That's really awesome.
It's not overkill. Song lyrics are not overkill. There
That's
you go.
Good to know. That's so good to know. Yay. I'm not a freak for putting every little inch of everything about my song in the metadata.
Right. No, you're not.
I feel
not
like I put more information there than I put on the liner sheets, you know, for for the CD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the liner notes are getting smaller and the metadata is getting bigger.
Yeah.
So that's really, really good to know. And, you know, another question that has come in is people want to know how far in advance is the music selected for projects?
It depends widely.
Okay.
Think about the way you create music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some songs are 20 minutes and you're like, man, I think I got something. And other songs you're like, I was working on this 2 months ago, but I'm going to give it another shot.
right.
So that's similar. I cannot tell you that. I worked on Entertainment Tonight and The Insider, where that's a daily show, 6 days a week, mm-hmm. grind. And songs have to be chosen in the moment. Like, I'm going from the morning meeting till about 12 or 1 o'clock, we're feeding out the show. So I have literally minutes to pick songs when I was working there for CBS. With film, it could be months. You could have 4 months. You could have a great script and all your music references and a director that just says, you know, just send me playlists when you have time. And you have all the time in the world.
Right.
So it varies widely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how can an artist make life easier for a music supervisor?
If you have your song streaming and you have all your metadata in and your song is mixed and mastered and you have all of your stems, and by stems I mean the full version of the song, I mean the instrumental only of the song, and then what they call drum and bass, which is, depending on the complexity of the song, could include only drum and bass but could also include some synth sounds in that. If you have those, I'm a very happy camper. I'm a pretty happy camper right there. I mean, and drums only too.
Oh.
And then we also have stings. We'll say stings. So if there are really poignant parts of your song, boom, 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 or a really cool intro or something like that, if you just have that sting, that little 8-second, you know, really push moment, what you'll notice is that most shows go in and out of scenes of, in that nature with these stings, with these musical stings. And so songs that have them, we can use them in a lot of different ways. So that if you have all of that, you're golden. And mix and master each one of those stems. So I shouldn't have this amazing sounding full mix and then this drum and bass that's...
Sounds like it's in the basement.
Sounds like it's in the basement. Everything should be mixed and mastered. And when you master, your metadata should be literally input into that as well. There's ways you can do that. So make sure that happens. If that happens, you're golden.
That's awesome, and it's so good to know, because I feel like these little tips you're giving us, they're not even little tips. These are, like, awesome.
Thank you.
That can help us to really, you know, as indie artists particularly, I mean, our community is mostly indie artists. We have a few people on labels, but we're about 70-30. 70% is mm-hmm. indie and 30% is not.
Yeah.
And so for the 70%ers, you know, this is really beautiful information that we don't have when you don't have a major label behind you doing all of these things,
exactly.
You know, so guys, this is really giving you a head up on how to get ahead and really get your music out there by making sure you do these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, Carolyn, when you and I first met, you were talking about this project that you really loved the music for, but you couldn't use it because it was not professionally mixed and mastered.
Yes. I don't even know what song she's talking about, guys, because it happens so often.
Really?
It happens so often. I will hear amazing music that, and ironically, it's generally music that has less sense. It has live instrumentation. It has all these really cool things, but they didn't take the time and energy to actually mix and master them professionally. You know, somebody might have mixed and mastered them, but especially recording live instruments, if you don't have that proper equipment, you do need a completely different engineer from who recorded it to really work back through that music and make sure everything aligns the way it needs to. It's really sad, but it happens so much.
You know, and it's so important. You know, we talk about here the business of music, and you know, when you're looking at your project, you can't just look at what it's going to cost you to record it. You also have to look at the finishing of it, the mixing and mastering it, and just listening what Carolyn was just saying. She even wants all the stems and the stings, you know, mixed and mastered so that they can be usable, and you give your life more legs so that you can have, you know, opportunities for more streams of income, which is what we're all about here.
Yes.
We need to eat.
Yes. So. Everybody should eat.
Absolutely.
And you know, this is important too. If you want to get your music on these music libraries, there's a lot of music licensees music licensing companies that now accept independent music. They're going to ask you for this because this is how they eat. If they're able to deliver to a director or to a music supervisor, because sometimes it could be either one, if they're able to deliver directly everything, all the music in different ways, the editor's happy, the director's happy, everybody can float from there. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know if there's a really poignant part in a scene that just doesn't need a full mix. It just needs just the instrumental there. Then maybe it gets fuller when the scene changes or something like that. But it just allows everybody to just relax. Otherwise, you got an editor that's like, well, where does it get quiet? You know what I mean? And the director's like, oh, that's stepping over dialogue. And it just goes back and forth. So the reasons are many.
Wow. You know, it's also, I want to talk about, like, how artists can best work with music supervisors. You've explained to us, like, what we need to get you as a music supervisor for you to love us and not want to go, in the trash.
You know?
So I understand the deliverables, but what else is important for artists to know about working with a music supervisor?
It's really all about relationship. And when I say relationship, I don't mean who you know, but I mean about being consistent, right? The benchmark of a good relationship is that that person is consistent. You know what to expect from them, and you can communicate well with them. So that is what you have to do. If you're going to pitch a music supervisor, you don't generally ask them, you know, what they're working on or whatever. You present to them, this is what I'm working on. These are the types of music. I mean, you kind of have to have a mission, a purpose. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a lot of people will send me stuff and they'll say, I have 10,000 songs. And the first thing that does is scare me because I'm not going to listen to 10,000 songs. That scares me. I work on all genres. That's going to scare me because I don't know what you're really good at. I don't know what you're really passionate about. And what I find is generally the people we love, they have a similar theme. Sade, when Sade comes to mind, you already know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to send you no country song.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Right.
It's probably going to be about love. It's probably going to be about something introspective. It's probably going to be sweet. You can expect, you just can bank on what she's kind of going to send you. And that's the kind of artist that I really love. I already have somebody in mind when I see a certain scene because they've consistently sent me new music in a certain vein, with the same certain theme that I can expect. Some things are different. There are exceptions. Some people really are different. But when I think about the blues guy who plays guitar, I don't want that guy sending me any hip hop. And if he does, I'm like, I think he doesn't do blues anymore. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so this is for me. Other people are different. But for me, I want to create a relationship with someone who consistently says songs about love. They send me their 5 songs every 3 to 6 months. They get better and better. They invite me out to their shows, you know, and you just know what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. It's just easy. So that's what I appreciate. It's not always easy, especially in this space where people are getting publishing deals, to just write whatever because they're trying to make money. But there's also an authenticity mm-hmm. that you lose if you work on everything. There's an authenticity that you lose if you have 10,000 songs. Then, you know, are you really working hard every day to kind of get out a certain message? And will that really resonate with an audience in a love scene or something if you're just cranking out music all the time? I don't know.
I think that's very valuable because, you know, I think all artists have a niche. Mm-hmm. And I think as you look around and you see what other people are doing, you go, oh my gosh, I need to shift. And you start trying to go in that direction and you lose your authenticity, as you're saying, because you're trying to make money because we have to eat.
Yeah.
And I think as artists, you know, I always feel it's easier to be authentic. Mm-hmm. But it's always not bankable.
No, it's not bankable.
Yeah.
But if you believe that what you're doing is right, you will find your audience. I think you can speak to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You will find your audience. You know, and we've all gone through that. I had a publishing deal where they signed us according to this soul music that we were doing, and then they were asking us to do this really basically raunchy R&B, mm-hmm. which is beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Call a thing a thing.
Call a thing a thing. And we literally had to just say, I don't think this is going to work out.
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, we're receiving checks to do this, this is not going to work out because you're consistently telling us not to be authentic, not mm-hmm. to do what we generally do, and it doesn't feel like we're getting anywhere.
right. And it's true. You know, it's why I left my deal when I was with the major label was, you know, I was cranking out one kind of thing and they're like, oh, take off more clothes and be sexier. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I am girl next door. I am not sexy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will never be, you know.
Yeah.
And so singing those kind of songs just didn't work. It was just, it was like, you know, two magnets that repelled each other mm-hmm. instead of stuck together.
Right.
So, you know, I think this is important that we're talking about this as well as a side note about being, you know, really authentic and true to who you are.
Yeah.
And just growing as an artist and trusting the process that you'll find your way and you'll find where your music fits in the world.
Yes.
And thank you so much for, like, recognizing that, you know, and saying that to us, because we hear conflicted things out there in the world.
Yeah.
But I think authenticity is the key, because mm-hmm. you feel good about yourself and you feel good about what you're creating
exactly.
when it's true to you.
Yes.
You know, and that was hard for me to figure out. You know, I started out in the business, as you guys know, in R&B, and I am not an R&B girl. I come from a spiritual opera background. So for me to take all of that and, you know, do some booty shaking songs was really inauthentic for me.
Right.
So me and the label went our opposite ways, and here we are today.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about what you do as a music supervisor. Like, who do you answer to and who do you lead?
Okay. It is so important. Did y'all hear what she said? Who do you answer to? As much as I think I'm the greatest person to choose music, ultimately, I answer to the story. And that means that takes on different things. So production companies will call me and say, we have this story or this film or this web series or this short film. And they'll say, these are kind of the characters or whatever. This is kind of what we're thinking, but let us know what you're thinking. But we all answer to the story. Producers and directors make the final say on what they want to put in their stories. And it's just for me to figure out budget, how budget fits into what they want musically. So my job is really to marry what they hear sonically with what they can pay for. There's not one without the other. You know?
Yeah.
Everybody wants a Beatles song in their film.
Right, of course.
Everybody. Yeah. Not everybody can afford it. So even though I'm primarily someone who chooses music, I'm also primarily someone who has to negotiate and deal with a lot of different personalities that are limited by budgets. Mm-hmm. That's really a huge part of my job.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that. I mean, of course I know that you negotiate, but I didn't really think about that being as a big part of your job.
It's a huge part. I mean, that's what we do. We negotiate mm-hmm. and we say, you know, this film is only this film. Mm-hmm. It's not a $400 million film. It's this kind of film. Even though this is an amazing song, can you give me this song, you know, at this price, mm-hmm. because we only want these kinds of rights. So, for example, and I'm getting more specific, but when I'm requesting a quote, I need a fee. I'm kind of looking for a fee, but I'm looking for a fee according to the terms of the deal. So that means, is it in theaters? Is it on the web? Is it paid streaming? Is it video on demand? Is it downloadable? So there's all these different options that tell me how much the song should be. And so that's a big part of my job, is figuring out how the options work with the terms, how long this is going to be. Is it going to be worldwide? Is it just going to be in North America? These are little things that you guys don't have to worry about, but there are things I have to worry about. You know, how can I get this to fit for what it needs to be?
Mm. And, yeah. And talking about that, let's talk about math
yes.
for a second, because yeah. I think that sometimes people are a little delusional with what they can get for their songs. So,
oh my gosh. Okay, I have to tell you the story.
Okay.
And I hope this artist isn't listening, because he'll know who he is even if I don't say his name. This person had never had a placement before. I was working on a web series. The web series was a first directorial debut. And there wasn't much of a budget. I work on different levels of different things, and this specific web series just didn't have a big budget. But they really loved his music, and he's a great artist, but he was not at a level that said that he had to be paid a certain amount. And his response to me in sharing what the fee would be was literally that I was insulting him and this type of speak. And all music supervisors have had this conversation with either management or with the artist about how they are worth so much more. And what they don't understand is that's why we were hired. Mm-hmm. We were hired because there's not an endless supply of money. We're hired because there's not an endless supply of time to go back and forth and negotiate exactly what everybody wants. We don't have that. So they hire us to be the bad guys, if you will. The good guys, but the bad guys. Yeah. And say, this is what the number is. Yes or no. And if you're going to say no, then I have to find someone else. And we went back and forth. And the only way we were able to actually secure him was him talking to someone else in the industry saying, do you know who that is? You said that to her? And not to say that I'm above anyone else, but it was a reminder that, hey, this is a relationship. This Absolutely. Is more about a relationship than it is about this specific project. And so she wouldn't come to you with a lower fee, you know, if she had more. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't make sense. If, yeah. if we're credentialed and we've been working in this industry, we're not coming to an independent artist just to lowball you. That's not our nobody's happy with that. Mm-hmm. Then we don't build good relationships that way. And so it's important that you just keep your head on, figure out, do I want to do this? Is this, and some people literally have to say, I'm only going to have a low fee for my songs 3 times this year. And you almost kind of get your head right and say, if people approach me, I'll do this 3 times, but after that, I'm charging this. And figure out what your number is. Nobody's telling you to give your music away to everybody, but just think about that. Not everybody has the budget for what you believe you're worth. And make a principled decision that this is what I'm going to do, and then move on. But people are asking you for your music because somebody else wants it.
Yeah.
We're not calling to just, hey, I want to just come and pick up your music.
Right.
You know what I mean? So just true. keep that in mind.
That's really helpful, because early in my career, I was I had an opportunity to be in a big film.
Yeah.
I mean, gigantic film.
Yes.
And they presented me with an offer, which was $0.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't take it.
Yeah.
Do you know that all these years later, I regret not taking it because that movie was so big?
Yeah.
It was so big.
Yeah.
So when do you know, how do you know if you should take zero?
Well, that's, okay, so what I just said is important.
Yes.
You have to figure out, every year I'm going to just do this. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. It could be a certain song. For me, I had a certain song where I said, I don't care. I want everybody to hear this song.
Yeah.
And whatever somebody comes to you know, whatever the quote is, I'm going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that about this song. And that song pays me still to this day. And I don't even sing hardly anymore. I don't even pitch my own music. Like, that song was written, I'm telling my age, over 10 years ago. But I still get a check from ASCAP every quarter because it's somewhere out in the mm-hmm. ethers. And so, you know when to accept zero.
Mm-hmm.
When you've kind of allowed the music to be what it is. You know that this is an amazing song that has a story that you want to tell, and you know that someone's going to pay you well for this song at some point, even if it isn't now, and whatever this project is worth, or let me say this, whatever the project is, you know, will have a wide audience mm-hmm. or has a potential to get your music out there. It's really important. We all look for internships.
Mm-hmm.
We all look for opportunities, mentorships. We all look for meetings with people that we know we're not getting paid to do. You have to see that part of that for your song as well sometimes. You know, going back to the real estate reference, sometimes you just got to let people sleep on your couch.
I love that. I love it.
Sometimes.
As a 17-year-old, I didn't get it. I was just like, zero.
which is crazy because now that's really. So I'll tell you what happens generally with these blockbuster movies. Generally with the blockbuster movies, music is like the most variable budget, mm-hmm. and then it's also like the last thing that's kind of getting done. So all the crew, everybody gets paid as they're shooting.
Right.
Right? Music is generally, we're working on the film before it's shot and after it's shot, but from a standpoint of payment isn't usually due until we've literally given kind of the first exhibition day and all that. So even though we may have our approvals and things, we're not actually confirming this is the fee, these are the terms, this is the amount of time the song is in the movie. We're not confirming that until everything is shot and there's a final cut of the movie. So that means we're kind of sometimes the last people to get paid or get payments out to other people. And when that happens, that means those other people, if they went over budget, mm-hmm. which happens every time, by the way, every time, or if there need to be reshoots, or if there needs to be additional ADR, all of those are incurring additional costs and adding to the budget. But the music budget was set months, sometimes a year beforehand, and it hasn't even been paid out. And then they say, oh, we want more of this, we want more of that. But we don't have any more budget. So that's what generally happens. If people are approaching you about something that's already kind of made, it's because the music budget was set a year ago and they've probably overdone it elsewhere, but they still want to add to it. And the only way they can do is what I call go begging. Here I go begging.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Oh, gosh. You know, those are hard life lessons, but good lessons indeed to learn, you know, as an artist about working in this industry and getting your music out there. But, you know, I love that you keep talking about the relationship and how important that is. And I think that that is something that some artists forget, is that, you know, if you're in this for the long haul, like if music is your passion, you're going to go to your grave doing music.
Yeah.
So you want to carry these relationships along with you if you can.
Right. And not only vertical relationships, but lateral ones. Azina is the perfect example of someone who understands the importance of lateral relationships. She's doing something, a service to other artists, even though she's an artist herself, because she knows how much it matters for there to be a community. It's important for you to support other singers and songwriters who are doing what you do. It's important to go to their shows. Yes, you want to rehearse and you want to be in the studio and that. It's important for you to go out and support, because as you pull each other up, outsiders, especially us music supervisors, we see collectives, we see groups, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's certain, take, for example, the Roots. The Roots came out, and they weren't all together at first. They were just artists supporting artists. And they came out so forcefully because when they performed together, when they were out together, they not only brought their individual fans together, but they brought people outside of the movement together because their community was so large. Mm-hmm. And why? Because it wasn't just supporting one, it was supporting the whole base.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm seeing that more and more. I mean, it's always been that the artists kind of cling together and support each other. But it's growing. The movements are growing. And I see definitely in our community, it's growing gangbusters. Like, I recommend people all the time for other articles. Mm-hmm. You know, if other people tell me they're looking for this kind of song, that kind of song, I'm recommending people all the time because I'm meeting people.
Yeah.
And I'm only one being, but there's, like, a lot of us in our community. There's, like, 20,000 of us strong. So out of that community, we can pretty much fill any order.
Right, right. And that's important to be able to deliver.
Yeah.
And when it's your time, it's your time.
It's your time, absolutely. Yeah. And just not being selfish. And, and you know, there are some people, old school people who don't want to share. And I think that the time has come for us to open our eyes and go, hey, this is for you. You know, even you, Carolyn, you might have a project and you're like, oh, Zena, I can't use your music. I'm looking for this. And I'm sure I could fulfill your order.
Yeah. But that's important. That's also about the relationship thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's pressure where you feel like, oh, this artist keeps asking me about using their music, but I can't. Mm-hmm. But if I see you recommending other people, whatever, there's less pressure even on me, because then I can just tell you what I'm looking for, and it doesn't have to be you.
Absolutely.
And you're okay with that.
Absolutely.
That gives me comfort.
I'm more than okay with
that. Right, because we all answer to the story. For me, in terms of music for scenes, music in film and TV and new media, it's about the story. It's nothing personal. Mm-hmm. We're all trying to just get to the best thing for the story.
And, you know, there's something that you said here about, and I just want to talk about it, you know, what you know now that, this is kind of the Oprah thing, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first started?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I started out as an intern at Sony Music Distribution. My first job in the music industry was as ticket coordinator. I'm going the long route here.
It's good. It's good.
As ticket coordinator, it was my job to get all the tickets for artists that were coming into town so that retailers, radio people, whoever wanted to go to the shows to support the artists had the tickets that they were supposed to have. That was my job. And back then, I wish I had known the importance of connecting with those people outside of work. So it's the entertainment industry. There's always free drinks. Well, back then.
right.
Everything was free.
Right.
Free drinks, free cars, free cabs, whatever you want to do. And I came up in Chicago. So
Chi-town.
Yes. And so it was just great to hang with people, but outside of those music events, I never took a walk with anyone. I never checked up on people's birthdays or checked up on people's families. But now as an adult, those people that I have the best business relationships with are people I have good personal relationships with as well. People who I've met their mother, or they came over for Thanksgiving, or those types of things. Now you have to pick and choose who's going to be your people. You can't invite everybody over for Christmas.
Right.
But do that. Create some friends. Do not let the business of music be your life. That is not your life. It is a means to an end. It's a way to get a story out. It's a way to impact people. But never forget that people come first. Family comes first. Friends come first. Keep those relationships. Hang out. Chill out.
Amen.
That's what I have to say about that.
Amen. That's incredible advice that I've never heard anybody say. Of all these interviews, this is interview 139.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Yeah, 139 in the house. But you know, I've never heard anybody say that, and that is so true. I'm going to go off of just a little bit, guys, just because I feel like I need to. I am also in writers groups, okay? And writers are the loneliest people in the world. They stay in their cubicles. They write. And all of these writers groups are starting to pop up all over LA. Mm-hmm. And I'm so psyched because the writers are getting out.
Yes.
And they're not feeling lonely. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we see so much depression and suicides and things in the entertainment industry because we're so insular.
Yeah.
And we have to reach out and touch each other, get together for holidays, call for everything you just said. We got to do everything you just said and more because people are people. And it is so, I can't say it enough. Thank you so much for saying that, because that is not something that anybody has said on this show ever. And it's important. It's a core thing right there.
It's literally fundamental.
Absolutely.
I would not, when I transitioned, it took me a long time to transition from CBS because I was scared to lose the community. Mm-hmm. I was scared to lose all the hookups. I mean, mm-hmm. it's Entertainment Tonight. Every day I see a new celebrity, a new music act. I have my hands in it and I'm thinking, well, are people going to accept me after I leave? You know, and I want to run my own thing. What's going to happen? And I just had to kind of take a step back and say, well, that's because you've been putting your job above the people in your life. And if you hadn't done that, you wouldn't feel forced to stay somewhere that you knew it was time for you to transition.
Oh wow, so, you're preaching.
So
Go on.
But once I said, okay, I'm gonna put my people first and mm-hmm. say, no, I'm gonna be who I am regardless of what a company would do for me or the prestige of working for a certain company would do for me. I'm just going to be Carolyn and that's going to be okay. And I swear I've been so blessed. Mm. Like, just saying. And the jobs and the things that happen now are all from friends that I kept in touch with. Or maybe they're forceful friends, what I call forceful friends. They call and say, what are you doing? Come over here. We're just hanging out. And I'm like, well, what is it? I need details.
Right.
I'm like, what time? And they're like, just come over. We're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything specific. We don't need anything. Just come hang.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, that's
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I hope you guys just heard that sermon. Like, she just put on,
stop
like,
it.
No, that was, like, brilliant and so needed. So needed. Like, yes, we're going to get back to the music supervision, but let's get to the human stuff. Like, that is so needed.
Yeah.
And we have to stop isolating ourselves and we have to stop being scared.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing, people are scared to call music supervisors. They're scared to reach out and touch. They're scared because, you know, oh, what if I do something wrong? Then I'll ruin that relationship forever. I don't think saying hi. Or sending an email, or
it doesn't. It's not gonna break anything. But just know that it takes time, but it also takes consistency. And I'll be honest. This is a honest moment. If I get one email, I generally don't respond. If it's someone I don't know, it's kind of like unsolicited submissions. Mm-hmm. I can't use them. I don't know who they are. I don't have the time to shift from things. But if I consistently see that person sending me some, hey, just checking in, mm-hmm. 3 months later, and then another 3 months, and I'm probably going to get my more email now. you know what I mean? Then I'm like, okay, let me see who this person is, who's just consistent and just kind of secure in themselves, and they're not just willy-nilly contacting a whole bunch of people. They're just kind of consistently moving forward. And that's just, that's to be admired. And it also shows kind of, this is just what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I promote my business. This is what I do. And I like that.
Yeah, it's good. It shows responsibility, you know. And as a music supervisor, how do you market your business?
Okay. So, I'm giving a whole bunch of tips. Okay.
That's why you're here.
Right.
Love us.
Okay.
Love us. Share.
So in the spirit of knowing that what is for me is for me.
Yes.
Being a music supervisor requires that you kind of keep relationships with production companies. Specifically heads of production, but also specific producers. So the heads of production generally are only tapped, if you will, once things are kind of in line to start being produced. But you want to stay in touch with the producers because they're going to be assigned to certain projects. So I'll tap a head of production every 3 months or so, and say, hey, and I use IMDb Pro. IMDb Pro will tell you all the projects that are in development on a certain level, Variety, Deadline, Hollywood Reporter. All of them send these cute little articles that say, oh, Viola Davis is doing this new project, or so-and-so just got signed to this, or so-and-so's script got picked up. Now, that means nothing to most of us. But for me, that says, contact this production company and get in line and let them know you're interested in this project. And so that's how I stay in touch. I stay abreast of all the news of new projects that are coming out. I stay in touch with the heads of production at major studios, but also at smaller production companies. I contact a lot of music libraries to see who they're working with, because sometimes production studios already have relationships with music libraries, and they may bring in a music supervisor to license songs, even if they already have an existing relationship with a music library. I sometimes do consulting work where I'm just bringing in a choir, or I'm bringing in someone to just do one custom song, or those types of things. I'm not always the music supervisor for everything. So that's what you do. Get a membership to IMDb Pro.
I got it.
And know everything that's coming out, and contact those directors. And again, authenticity is key. Don't contact a whole bunch of people whose work you have not watched, whose stories you do not believe in. They can smell it a mile away. I don't like horror films. You will never see me. I don't care what level it is. You will never see me as music supervisor of a horror film, because I don't watch them and I don't like them. And I probably couldn't, you know, figure out the music for them because I don't like them. Yeah. and so everybody, and again, I'm speaking for me. Some people are like, I will take all projects. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah.
I'm not. I want to work on things that will make me cry, things that will make me think, things that will make me move to action. That's what, if it doesn't make me think, cry, or do something, I don't want to work on it. And horror films just make me go crazy. So that's important. Look for, know what projects are coming out, know directors, know production companies, because it's the same thing. Everything works by purpose. Most production companies come out with similar films. They work on the similar stuff. And so you can literally align yourself and kind of know, oh, these people always put out the same kind of movie.
Right.
So, and the same kind of music is in the movie. I mean, there's some exceptions, but generally it's kind of the same. So just figure out your people and let them figure out that you're one of their people. And go from there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you said something. You said a magic word in there. Custom songs.
Yes, I said custom songs. Yes,
how
yes,
do
yes.
you get into doing custom songs? What is that?
Okay.
How does that work?
Ooh. Okay.
I'm going to take you off the hot seat in a minute. We're going to listen to some music
okay.
in a minute. But
so first, I want to shout out Tara Stinson. She has... Well, for Golden Globes, she was nominated for Mudbound. Yep. She did the end title for Mudbound.
That's right.
And she also did the end title for Jump. Or the name of the song is Jump, but it's for a documentary called Step. And she's probably going to be nominated for an Oscar for Best Song with either one of those songs. So I just want to shout her out.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I wish she were here to talk about how she continually gets picked to do these end title songs.
Call us 818-602-4929 if you're listening.
But, you know, they have come so many ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes from a director that says, I really want something just for this movie. It comes from producers who say, I don't really like the end title we picked, so can we try to get something just for us? Or it'll come from, sometimes editors will even say, this song is not cutting it. I had a theme song that we had paid for and everything, and when they actually got to cutting the trailer, the editor was like, it doesn't work. And we're all the producer, and I'm looking at them like, I already paid for that.
Right.
You know, to get out of my
right.
But we had to pick a different song from the artist and kind of just ask, can we just switch over all the paperwork and redo it because this song is better for the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole theme of the whole show changed because of the rhythm they needed for the trailer. So there's a number of different ways, but again, we answer to the story, and that's how you get chosen to do custom songs, is literally pitching to the director sometimes. So IMDb Pro will give you synopses on a lot of stories, and sometimes if you know the actors that are going to be in a story and you kind of know the synopses, you can write songs
absolutely
for a movie that's not even shot yet and just go for it. That's, I mean, it's really as simple as that. Sometimes songwriters will literally ask, hey, can we write a song for this? And they'll say, sure, because there's no obligation in that. And but then they really love the song. They say, oh, we will use this. Mm-hmm. We had no plan to, but we will. So different ways.
That's brilliant. Now, we're headed towards the end, but I want to talk about your new project that you're working on.
Which one? Which
Love,
one?
Love, Peace, and Happiness.
Oh, okay. So, Love, Peace, and Happiness is the theme song for Funny Married Stuff.
Okay.
Funny Married Stuff is a web series that I worked on. It's in its second season. The second season will be released soon, probably on a really awesome distribution channel,
Yay!
I'll say that. We can't speak about it yet, and so we're just waiting. But it's going to be awesome. And so Love, Peace, and Happiness is a theme song for Funny Married Stuff. And it was really hard figuring out what we're going to use. But when we heard this song, it was literally perfect. Funny Married Stuff is literally about a couple, a married couple, and their single friend. And all the stuff that happens in their lives, but also in their single friend's life.
Wow. So. Well, let's listen right now. Love, right. Peace, and Happiness by
Sam Trump.
Sam Trump. All right.
Anything you want, anything you need, I'll be there for you and your security too. Give me your heart, the key, and you will see I will lock it down for you. So you never leave. Ooh, you're telling me. What you've got, and you've got love, exactly what I've been thinking of, yeah. Your attraction is something rival. Well, I think it's time to make the move and take it to the next level, next level. Settle for me, believe in me. I guarantee forever will be. I never fallen in love before, in love before. See, nowadays, it's so hard to trade your heart for free. You need a receipt, just in case you gotta return every nick on your choice. Inevitable lovers remorse, yeah. This society blows things out of proportion. You see, I don't just wanna take you home, I wanna make a home. I'm talking about a lifetime, yeah. Cause a real man doesn't have a home. You just gotta be ready, and baby, I'm ready. Oh.
that was incredible. That was Love, Peace, and Happiness
by Sam Trump.
Sam Trump. We love it, Sam. Keep writing. Keep working. Keep going. This is great. This is so great. So Funny Married Stuff is a web series, and you can check it out now on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And this is the theme. That was the theme song for Love, Peace, and Happiness.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, composing music for TV and film, and sometimes the tracks may be too busy or what. How is there a method? Like, tell us what we need to know about that.
Okay, so my rule of thumb is, can the amount of musicians on the track fit in the room of the scene that you're playing the music for?
Okay.
So generally on television, everything is, I don't want to say up close, but pretty up close. You can, if you were standing at a TV and you were really looking at the people on TV, you could hit them if you stretched your arm out, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that means there shouldn't be more than three or four really strange things happening. Mm-hmm. So you need a voice, you need a drummer, you need a bass, and you probably need a guitar. Maybe a few cool synths, maybe. Keys, you know, you can figure out how that works depending on what the song needs. But after that, it's probably too much. You know, it's funny, this exception of Love, Peace, and Happiness, uh-huh. it has horns in it. Yeah. And generally, horns are a no-no on television. I don't know if you guys have figured that out, but if you watch anything, almost none of the songs have horns in them, generally because they're horns and they're blaring, and they are literally additional voices, and they clash with dialogue, and they clash with the rest of the music. I mean, just think about it. Even when you're listening to Love, Peace, and Happiness, you can't hear much of the bass and the keys and all that when you hear the horns. Mm-hmm. And so that's an exception that it yeah. kind of works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so think about that. If you're telling a story and you have music in the background, you're arguing with a loved one, right? If some really cool music comes on and it kind of can play during your argument, then that's probably a good song for that scene. Mm. If it will make you stop arguing, like, get your attention that way, it's probably too jarring and too busy or whatever to fit within that scene. So I know that's hard for you guys to think about, but think about that. I don't need four tracks of guitar.
Nope. Oops. Guilty. We're all guilty here, Guitar
Well,
Goddess.
Well, I will say this. So remember when Grey's Anatomy kind of had started becoming the poster child for good music supervision?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And why? Because it was indie rock. It was like one voice. It was like one guitar. Mm-hmm. It was like singer-songwriter. And we were able to connect with those characters because we kind of could almost see that songwriter in the story of what that character may have been going through. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's why we ask for just almost a stripped down acoustic version, because we just want to be able to feel what the character is feeling. Music is the bridge between emotion or the soul level and the mind level. So that's what, you know, strip it down.
All right. Well, that is the ending advice for today, is to strip it down. Music is the bridge to the mind, the heart, the soul, and just keep that in mind as we're writing.
Yeah.
Well, Carolyn, this has been, oh my gosh, just so incredible. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being so generous with all of the information. I mean, this has been a breath of fresh air, just a beautiful, beautiful show.
Amazing.
And just thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you guys for listening.
Oh, we loved having you, and hopefully you'll come back again.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. All right, you guys, until next time, you keep rocking. You've been listening to Guitar Goddess with Ezina LeBlanc and Carolyn Richardson.
Yes.
All right.
Y'all have a good one.
All right. And her company is called Music for Scenes. Music for Scenes. So if you have some good stuff, forward it her way.
All thank right. you.
Until next time, keep going. Keep rocking.
You're listening to Guitar Goddess Radio with Ezina, only on LA Talk Radio.